also leave this mirage. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about the optical illusions of the world. We had talked a little bit about what an optical illusion was, and then we were starting to talk about the illusions and the mirage of this world. And we said, you know, the wealth and the power and the position and the, you know, social status and the esteem and all of these things, they are temporary. They are part of this material dimension that we are living through in the continuum of our existence. And so what's going on is that we end up spending all of our efforts, all of our time, all of our energy on these things, and these are things which will eventually erode. They will be destroyed, they will vanish, they will finish, right? And so we end up falling for this mirage, we end up falling for this optical illusion. The wealth, the grandeur, you know, the status, the power, the greed, the lust, the jealousy, the carnal desires, all of these things are petty things which will stay in this world. So what do we need to do? And of course, this is all part of our Islamic lifestyle, things that we do in our Islamic lifestyle, the goals and the purpose that we have in our Islamic lifestyle, and the things that we shouldn't do in our Islamic lifestyle, and excuse me, the things that we should do in our Islamic lifestyle. So what should we be focusing on? Well, we should be focusing on what is truly real and what is truly permanent and eternal and immortal, and that is the hereafter. So where does the world fall into play? Well, it is in this world that we will sow the good deeds that we will reap in that hereafter, which is our ultimate goal of our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The limelight.
Iran's prestige as the foremost supporter of Palestine's freedom struggle has been enormously bolstered. It is a position it has not shied away from nor concealed. The most important lesson of Iran's heroic mission is that fighting for liberation, defending sovereignty, and resisting occupation and oppression is a just cause. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, "The eve of April 14th, 2024, and the hours that followed into the night will be recorded in history as truly momentous. For it saw the Islamic Republic of Iran launch the military operation directly from its soil on apartheid Israel's colonial regime. Operation True Promise, as it was called, was a natural and legitimate response to the Tel Aviv regime's illegal airstrike on the Iranian consulate in Damascus recently, which resulted in the assassination of seven Iranian military officials, including a senior IRGC commander. settlers attest to the tense hours when Iranian long-range drones and ballistic missiles hovered over the night skies of the occupied territories as bewildering, shocking, and alarming. Many said they spent the night in bunkers and safe rooms, frightened, anxious, and sleepless. It was a new reality they were confronted with, to have been on the receiving end of an attack, much different from being cheerleaders to the slaughter of thousands of innocent Palestinians in Gaza and the repetitive programs in the occupied West Bank. A columnist in Forward described the somber reality of the effects of Iran's retaliatory strikes in the following words, quote, "Sunday is the start of the Israeli work week, but the schools and many offices were closed for the day. This cosmopolitan city's typically crowded light rail was sparse and remarkably silent, with a few passengers glued to their smartphones looking for answers nobody could seem to find," unquote. While the uncertainty of the result of Iran's epoch-making attack has preoccupied military analysts keen to find answers, they certainly cannot ignore the fact that the regime's deterrence capacity has been severely compromised and its much-hyped intelligence prowess has been exposed as a myth. Former French military mission chief to the United Nations, General Dominique Trinquant, made an important point, saying the significant development in this conflict is that Iran has directly hit Israel. Though advanced American defense technology intervened on behalf of Israel to intercept many of the drones and missiles, the Iranian attack carries significant weight, he hastened to add. He wrote, "One cannot underestimate the number of missiles and drones fired at Israel from Iran, Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon with strikes on the Golan Heights." An equally important observation was made by Didier Leroy, a researcher at the Royal Military Academy of Belgium. According to him, "We have crossed a qualitative threshold that changes the dynamics and repositions Iran on the map as an active military player." From this vantage point, as a former director of Israeli military intelligence, Amos Yadlin predicted that the Iranian attack may lead to a strategic change in the war in Gaza and even to its end. The military decree issued by the Zionist regime's war cabinet to block information on the damage caused by Iran's attacks has gagged local and international media platforms and denied access to independently verified claims that minimal damage had occurred. Such repressive conduct, which unfairly censors news content, has given the regime carte blanche to disseminate propaganda couched as information but far removed from truth and accuracy. A prominent Iranian analyst, Professor Sayed Mohammad Marandi, insisted that Iran's main targets were two Israeli regime airbases and that 20 or more missiles struck their targets. He noted, "The other drones and older generation missiles were inexpensive decoys that depleted the Israeli air defense capabilities of most of its very expensive missiles." Skeptics who may argue that Iran's attack was a failure either ignore or deliberately obfuscate the new reality of deterrence injected by the Islamic Republic. From an Iranian perspective, the attack on its consulate in Damascus was a red line which, if not retaliated against, would erase any notion of deterrence, opening the door for even more brazen Israeli regime military actions, up to and including direct attacks on Iran. No wonder that former U.S. Marine Corps intelligence officer Scott Ritter described Iran's retaliatory attack as one of the greatest victories of this century. Operation True Promise will go down in history as one of the most important military victories in history of modern Iran, keeping in mind that war is but an extension of politics by other means. The fact that Iran has established a credible deterrence posture without disrupting major policy goals and objectives is the very definition of victory, wrote Ritter. This point is also emphasized by Palestinian academic professor Sami Al-Aryan. He insists that the theory of Israeli deterrence has been greatly undermined. He said, "The strategic situation of the Zionist regime after October 7th is not the same as it was before. Similarly, the regional strategic situation after April 14th is not the same as well." No matter how Israel's racist right-wing regime, headed by a megalomaniac warmonger Benjamin Netanyahu, attempts to spin its lockdown as a victory, the facts dispute this narrative. Iran's prestige as the foremost supporter of Palestine's freedom struggle has been enormously bolstered. It is a position it has not shied away from nor concealed. In fact, part of the strategic calibration that went into its well-coordinated retaliatory attack has been to ensure that Gaza's plight is neither overshadowed nor forsaken. Unsurprisingly, Gaza-based resistance movement Hamas backed Iran and affirmed the natural right of countries and peoples in West Asia to defend themselves in the face of Zionist aggressions. It said, "The military operation carried out by Iran against the Zionist entity is a natural right and a due response to the crime of targeting the consulate in Damascus. The most important lesson of Iran's heroic mission is that fighting for liberation, defending sovereignty, and resisting occupation and oppression is a just cause."
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means to appoint.
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed.
His decree, though.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Foresight, and I'm your host, Mehdi. Please stay with us. يا إله كل شيء ومليك يا رب كل شيء وصانع يا خالق كل شيء وورث. Today's tip: prayers, salah, tranquility, and ubudiyya. So, dear listeners, we are talking about our prayers, we're talking about our salah, at least our wajib, obligatory five daily prayers of the day, and we're talking about tranquility, and we're talking about ubudiyya, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to Allah. Now, we're all trying to look for a little peace of mind and tranquility and serenity and calm. Unfortunately, in the world that we live in, because these non-Islamic systems and these non-God-oriented systems are prevalent all across the world, we find that these systems, because they're trying to attain their own selfish interests, are in reality contradictory to and in opposition to the interests of human being. Now, you kind of start to think, well, who is it that will delineate and list and explain what are the different benefits of a human being? Well, this is where Islam comes into play, right? And a little bit of a theological discussion, and that is that Allah is the creator, and so the creator will know best what it is that is in the best interest of the human being. And so it is Islam that teaches us what the best interests of human beings are. And if we look on the practical level and on the ground, we will find that it is Islamic teachings and it is the Holy Quran and the teachings of the Messenger of Allah and the infallible Imams, peace and blessings upon them all, that bring this self-interest of a human being to its peak and bring about tranquility and peace of mind and calm. We look across, you know, the various different other non-God-oriented systems and non-Islamic systems of the world, you will find that people still are looking for some sort of calm and peace of mind and tranquility. But unfortunately, because they are non-God-oriented systems, well, they can't teach you those things that God can teach you. And so people resort to pharmaceutical drugs, antidepressants, sleep medications, and all of these things are incredibly addictive, by the way. Or they have turned people towards quote-unquote entertainment, which is really the poisoning of the soul, or social media and how that is incredibly addictive, as well as alcohol and drugs and fornication, adultery, prostitution, and the list goes on and on, and it's very unfortunate. When in reality, Allah has clearly delineated all those things that will bring about tranquility and peace of mind to the heart.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today we're on the streets of Melbourne talking to people to see just how much they really know about Islam. So what do you know about Islam?
I live in a predominantly white area, so I don't know a whole lot, but I do like to think of myself as well kind of learned in that kind of area.
Very little, pretty much nothing. I know that it's a religion.
Yeah, you know that it's a religion?
Yeah.
Not much, to be honest. I'm not very religious myself, but I know that the public eye is being changed to, you know, look at them differently.
Yeah.
In my eyes, it's, I don't know, it's just a bit confusing. Yeah.
It's a religion?
Yep.
What do I know about it? Yeah, they've got the Quran, which is like their Bible.
Yep.
They got Ramadan. And yeah, I really don't know that much about it, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you know that it's a religion of peace, and it's not obviously how the media media portrays it to be?
Yeah.
Oh, like the bad stuff, really?
Yeah.
Not really any good stuff about it.
Yeah.
Just what the news shows us.
Yeah. Well, that is the negative propaganda that we're here to clear, man. Yeah. So, basically, Islam's just a religion of peace. Basically, we're taught that we're not allowed to kill any innocent people.
Yeah.
That's completely against the religion. If you do kill any innocent people, you go straight to hell. So basically, everything that that's happening in the name of Islam is false. So, you know, people will associate anything with, like, anyone they want to, you know. Do you know what Ramadan is?
Yeah, I do. It's the month of fasting.
It's the month of fasting.
I just know it's when Islamic people, they fast for a week, is that right?
A month.
Month, okay. I know, yeah, just about that, but I don't understand anything behind it.
It's like fasting or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so Muslims fast for a month. Yeah, so we fast for 30 days, 29 days, according to the lunar calendar, the moon, the Islamic calendar. And so basically, yeah, we just fast for 30 days. We try to get closer to God and that kind of thing in those 30 days. Do you know where Mecca is?
I believe it's in Jerusalem. I could be wrong.
It's in Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
No. I know it's... Is it like north or something? I don't know. I know it's in a certain place.
It is. It is actually north, northwest.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's in Saudi Arabia.
Mecca is in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
Mecca is a city in Saudi Arabia. It's got the Kaaba in there. It's a place where Muslims go for pilgrimage. You're supposed to go once in your lifetime, if you're able, if you have the means, if you're not, you know, if you don't have an injury or that kind of thing. Do you know if Muslims believe in Jesus?
I think that they don't, but I'm not too positive on the actual truth of that, so...
As I said before, I'm not very religious,
okay.
But, yeah, I wouldn't... Yeah, I don't really look into that much. All I see is, you know, the propaganda, as you said before, in the news stories, but, yeah, I don't dive into all the facts behind it, so...
I think Jesus is... I'm not actually sure, but I thought he may be one of the prophets, or is it?
That is very correct. Yeah.
I reckon some of them would.
Yeah.
Like, well, maybe not all of them.
Yeah. Well, all Muslims are taught that we have to believe in Jesus. We believe that Jesus was a messenger of God, and we believe that the Bible was revealed to him. We don't believe that he's the Son of God or that he's a God himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. We believe that there is only one God, and there are no partners associated with him.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. And so what we were saying, was that this idea of tranquility and peace of mind and our daily prayers. And so when it comes to our daily prayers, you know, this is something that really does bring us tranquility. Now, sometimes we might say that, you know, daily prayers, salah, wajib prayers, you know, this doesn't bring me any tranquility. Well, the problem most probably is that you're not paying attention, you're not focusing, you're not putting your heart into these daily prayers. Otherwise, these daily prayers, they do bring us this peace of mind and they do bring us this tranquility that we're looking for. And for example, so, you know, we read the Quran, but we don't read the translation or we don't feel its effects. Well, perhaps we're not reading the Quran with sincerity, or we're not reading the Quran, you know, with attention or focus, right? Otherwise, these daily prayers and the recitation of the Quran, they do bring us tranquility. They do help us to be able to connect with Allah, and it is in essence, it is that connection with Allah which is bringing about our tranquility. It's nothing other than that, right? Don't think that the prayers or the du'as and the supplications or the salah or the hajj, you know, or for example the recitation of the Quran in and of itself, you know, independent, is what is ultimately bringing us tranquility. No, these are all means that help us to connect to Allah. So, well, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, we're quite cunning in the negative sense, and we say, well, we don't have to do any of these things, we'll just have a connection with Allah, and that'll bring us tranquility. You know, yes, having a connection with Allah, having a conversation with Allah, feeling close to Allah will bring about a certain level of tranquility. But there's a difference between, you know, a improper dose of medication and a proper dose of medication. And so an improper dose of medication is this regular conversation and this kind of thing that we want to establish a connection with Allah to bring us tranquility. But the proper dose is that dose which Allah the Creator has put forth for the self-interest of humanity. And Allah has said that if you want a proper dose of medication for tranquility, that is the daily prayers. That is the recitation of the Quran. That is reading about the history and the seerah and the sunnah of the Messenger of Allah and the infallible and immaculate Imams, alayhi wasalam. This is the proper dose. So, sure, you know, an improper dose will kind of get us along the way, but it's not going to help us as much as that proper dose. And that's something that we need to realize. And this proper dose of salah, or for example, reading the Quran, or, you know, having some research or reading about the lives and the manners of the Messenger of Allah and the infallible Imams alayhi wasalam, this proper dose is what will truly bring us tranquility, and it will bring a long-term tranquility, and it is what will truly cure us. Right? Why resort to an improper dose when you have the proper dose, right? So inshallah, this will help us in our ubudiyah. It will bring about tranquility in our lives, inshallah. And like we said, most importantly, it will increase and strengthen and level up our ubudiyah, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at farstoday.ir. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. جل في ولا هو أنسي وملاذي أحتمي بحما حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير حسبنا الله حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل حسبنا الله حسبنا الله حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل.
Welcome. The intense debate within the entity regarding the repercussions of the Iranian attack and the Zionist response strategy continued to take center stage in the Zionist media, which reflected an uncomfortable reality for Israelis. This is while criticisms on the failure of the aggression on Gaza to achieve its objectives remain present in the comments of analysts and experts. I'd like to go ahead and welcome my guest today, Mr. Muhammad Abed, a political analyst. Thank you very much, Mr. Muhammad, for joining us. Mr. Muhammad, I do want to start off with a question really quick on the latest developments. The Iranian Revolutionary Guards announced that if Israel does decide to attack their nuclear sites, they will go ahead and retaliate to their own nuclear sites, Israel's, of course.
Well, this is only fair because, you know, this is tit-for-tat policy, as may be mentioned here. But even within the April 13th strike, there were reports about some damage inflicted on the Dimona facilities. Some hit near the facility, and one was hit directly, but without a lot of damage being taking place there. But it was sort of a message, probably, by the Islamic Republic of Iran that if you do this to us, we are able to achieve the same against your facilities.
Well, with that, let's go ahead and continue now with the Iranian attack on the entity, which continues to haunt the minds and hearts of the Zionists as drones and missiles fell like rain, causing severe material and morale losses to the Israelis who witnessed the effects of the weapons used in the attack. Israeli social media buzzed with continuous comments on the Iranian attack, seeing Netanyahu leaving Zionists to their fate in facing Iran.
Ore Allah, I can't believe they launched this missile at us and we haven't responded yet. Limol, can you believe it? And on top of that, some are telling us not to retaliate. Sharon, the Iranians conducted an experiment on us. Next time it will be worse if we don't respond. Han, the important thing is that we were in the fortified room. Eliano, Netanyahu hides with his family in a fortified shelter, and the people are left to confront Iran.
Well, Mr. Abed, Zionists witnessed the erosion of deterrent capabilities in their army. What reality does the occupation live in now after this Iranian attack?
So this was a sort of an event that shed the light and underscored this very fact, which started throughout the years from 1982 up till now, with the attacks of the Islamic resistance on in Lebanon against the Israeli occupation forces, and went on till the year 2000 when they had to flee the country. The Israeli occupation forces had to flee the country because they could not counter the Islamic resistance and Hezbollah forces. And now they are facing it more face to face, that their weaknesses are all already there. The fact that they needed the U.S. and a lot of NATO countries in order to protect them from the Iranian drones, all these are creating a sense of insecurity among any Israeli citizen. If I'm an Israeli citizen, I'd be just thinking of way to flee the country. And a lot of them now are just looking back to find any trace where they can get a foreign passport so that they can leave the country.
Well, with that, let's go ahead and move over now to the Iranian response to the attack, targeting the consulate section in the Iranian embassy in Damascus, which was not anticipated by the Zionist intelligence or the leadership of the occupation army, a glaring failure that may have repercussions, as former Zionist war minister Avigdor Lieberman says. Well, Mr. Abed, how do you explain the failure of Zionist intelligence agencies in anticipating the Iranian attack and its implications on the security reality in the entity?
Well, yesterday, exactly, there was another failure by their intelligence, and the Hezbollah and Islamic resistance was able to attack a base that was supposed to be a secret base that was created recently. So failures are following them wherever they go. Now, what Lieberman is saying is that they need to be they need to be held accountable for this. Now, you have also to keep one possibility, which remains likely, that although Netanyahu knew that there would be an Iranian retaliation, but still he did the attack in order to have a tit-for-tat attack, and then he would have the Americans dragged into a direct conflict with the Americans. We have to keep this possibility, but of course the Americans aborted this.
Despite all the noise of debate and discussion in the political and media circles within the occupation entity about the Israeli response to the Iranian attack, ears are turned deaf in response to abound opinions about the method, nature, and size of the response, including warnings against being dragged into war with Iran and the region. What do you believe? I mean, we have the question that confuses the Zionists. What is the response, or what will it be against or in the Iranian attack? What are the reasons for these differences among their circles in the enemy Zionist entity?
Well, this is exactly their dilemma. They have to find a response that would be face-saving to them, but still not angering the Iranians, meaning without producing any retaliation. And this is sort of a, will be a quagmire, a sort of a problematic, because you cannot find such a response in order to find to your people. But what I read also between the lines here is the recognition of the hitting of the base that launched the main attack against the consulate in Damascus.
Mr. Abed, do you think that the entity prefers the return of American European support and adhere to normalization instead of responding to the sake of responding, as he mentioned?
Well, he's facing a real horrible situation with the loss of all that support. And you know, we all know that Israel is not a state that relies on itself at all. It only relies on aids and the financial aid and economic aid.
Weapons and allies.
Weapons,
yes.
And arms and coming from allies. So now they return, and this shows the hypocrisy of the Western powers, because when they say they boycotted Israel or they want to sanction Israel, we see them rush to rescue Israel whenever it is in threat. So basically, because Israel is the project of the Western powers in the world.
How do you assess the reality experienced by the settlers in the border with Lebanon?
Well, you say what was inflicted on the Israelis is the fact what we may call the curse of the geography, because at that border was the most ferocious enemy of Israel, that is Hezbollah and the Islamic Resistance, and with all its powers. And also the curse of geography, as for them, because the north is very important because of the agriculture. Because of to the west, we have, sorry, to the east, you have many resort areas and tourism taking place there. All this stopped because of the war, and this was the price they had to pay for the continuation of their massacres in Gaza, and the price was made, Hezbollah made them pay this price as long as they are continuing their massacres against Gaza.
Well, we are hearing, of course, promises from the occupation leaders to return the settlers to the settlements soon and to push Hezbollah behind the borders, as we know. In the opinion of many Zionists, these are impossible promises. What is your take on this?
Yes, of course, because the people of the South are the ones who are defending the South, and this can be proven when you see the funerals of the martyrs that fall in the South Front. They are buried in their villages, which are at the border. So this is illogical, meaning you have to expel the residents of the real owners of the land in order to make occupiers return to their land. And of course, Sayyid Nasrullah, Hassan Nasrullah, Secretary General of Hezbollah, said that these are dreams. They cannot dream of having anyone withdrawing from that area, because the aim of the existence of the resistance there is to defend these areas against an enemy which has proven to be very hostile since 1948 up till now.
Yes. Is this a recognition that the Iranian attack has not significantly altered regional alignments in favor of Israel?
Well, you may say so, but with the exception of the main Western powers we talked about earlier, that rushed to defend Israel against the Iranian retaliation strike.
Because, yes, and we're talking about the Arab powers, yes.
Yes, but for the Arabs, no. Also, you have Jordan that was involved directly.
Yes.
There were reports about the Saudis opening their airspace to the Israeli warplanes. So things will have to wait a little bit in order to be clarified. But no, they still maintain. It's like when you have a son and you punish him for a little bit, but if he's in real threat, you rush to rescue him. And so I don't think things are that strict of them losing the support of Westerners and the Arab normalizers.
Mr. Abed, why are the doubts increasing about the usefulness of continuing this aggression on Gaza in Zionist political, media, and public circles instead of demanding a ceasefire and, of course, the prisoner exchange deal?
I think we should ask it the other way around, because what outcome did we see? What positive goals were achieved or objectives that were declared at the beginning of the campaign?
You mean
campaign,
from the Zionist
from the Israeli
entity
side,
parts, yes.
So nothing was achieved. So it took them too long, 6 months, to realize this. So that's why we hear all these voices. They want a price to be paid and then to have the swap.
But do you
prisoners.
Think they have actually realized this? 6 months after,
well,
have they realized
everybody,
this?
I think everybody realizes this, and even Netanyahu. But Netanyahu wants to remain in power in order to remain out of prison, because as long as this is possible.
Here, accusations are also leveled against Netanyahu and his government for obstructing ceasefire negotiations and, of course, the exchange deal, despite the failure to undermine the resistance. Your opinion on this?
Yes, and this is true, because it is against their interest to have any sort of swap or exchange, because this underlines the real defeat of Israel. They doing what they promised not to do since the October 7th attack. Then you had them saying that we will eradicate Hamas, we will free the prisoners, they call them the hostages, without any prices, etc., etc., and nothing was achieved. But still, they are stubborn enough in order to try to prolong the suffering of the Palestinians. But here you have to take into account one small thing, that is,
yes,
probably they are also, they want to have anyone think that whenever you do such an attack, such as that of the October 7th, you will be paying this price with massacres and over 30,000 martyrs and so on.
In Palestine. Amid ongoing Arab and international communications about Gaza's future after the end of the war, the Israeli media leaked information about an Arab international project to hand over the sector to a NATO force for 5 years, paving the way for the establishment of an alternative authority to Hamas. Well, Mr. Abed, I do actually have a few questions on this part. So an international force, possibly NATO or similar, the day after the end of the war in Gaza, I mean, how do you assess such a project and, of course, its practicality?
Well, but before you have to give this Gaza Strip to another power, you have to remove the power that is already there and which the Israelis have already have failed to do. So, I mean, Hamas, they were not able to defeat Hamas up till now.
Yes.
Look, what they are doing here, you have to read between the lines. Like the same as we have here in Lebanon with the UNIFIL forces. The UNIFIL are not here to protect Lebanon. They are to protect Israel from Lebanon. And this is what they need from such a NATO force or any other force. They want protection from the Palestinians and the effort and the mission that they failed to do of eradicating that threat of the Palestinian resistance.
Exactly. Well, it's actually noteworthy to go ahead and mention that this project to establish the international force in the Gaza Strip is being discussed with multiple Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Egypt, and Jordan. What does that mean?
These are the normalizing countries, and these are the countries also that...
So it's expected.
At least suspected of assisting the Israelis with their to counter the Iranian attack. It's only logical to expect this from them, whatever is in the interest of Israel,
yes,
for them to rush to try to help in this regard.
I'd like to go ahead and thank you very much, Mr. Mohammed Abed, a political analyst, for joining us for our show today.
Most welcome. My pleasure.
Thank you very much. Until next time, salam.
بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem. Inshallah, today we will talk about Ayah 59 of Surah An-Nisa, an ayah that talks about an important issue on page 87. So, brothers and sisters, the same as Ali Nasser and Fawad, open your Quran in front of you, page 87, ayah 59. Let's listen to the recitation.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. يا أيها الذين آمنوا أطيعوا الله وأطيعوا الرسول وأولي الأمر منكم فإن تنازعتم في شيء فردوه إلى الله والرسول إن كنتم تؤمنون بالله واليوم الآخر ذلك خير وأحسن تأويلا.
Great recitation, mashallah, mashallah. Let me read it quickly once, then we'll explain some important points, okay? Then inshallah we'll move on to the tajweed rules. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا أيها الذين آمنوا أطيعوا الله وأطيعوا الرسول وأولي الأمر منكم فإن تنازعتم في شيء فردوه إلى الله والرسول إن كنتم تؤمنون بالله واليوم الآخر ذلك خير وأحسن تأويلا. This is an important line. A very, very, very important line. That if Muslims practice this ayah, the message of this ayah in their lives, there will be no problems in their government, in their political issues, in their
only for Muslims?
Yeah. We are talking about Muslims, but the whole world. Generally. Okay? Because Allah talks about Muslims, okay? Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu. But in general, if all people, if they follow this ayah, okay? Listen, what does this ayah mean? Allah Almighty says, O you who have faith, ya ayyuhalladhina amanu. Obey Allah and obey the Apostle, أَطِيعُ اللَّهُ وَأَطِيعُ الرَّسُولُ, and obey those vested with authority among you, those who are given authority among you, the imams. The imams.
Yes. Okay?
Because after the Prophet, the imams are given the shari'i authority by Allah Almighty.
Yes.
فَإِن تَنَازَعْتُمْ فِي شَيْءٍ Aha, this is the point, look. And if you had any controversy, any disagreements, okay, between you, and you have one idea, the other one has one idea, okay? So look, you're Muslims. If you had this kind of controversy, okay, what should you do? Come on. In order to stop kind of fights, in order to stop this kind of chaos in the society, in the Islamic community, what should you do? فَرُدُّوهُ إِلَى اللَّهِ وَالرَّسُولِ. Refer it to Allah and the Apostle. It means refer it to the rules sent by Allah Almighty to the Prophet and Prophet who has taught you, okay? The Ahadith, the Quran. إِن كُنْتُمْ تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِن كُنْتُمْ تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ. If you have faith in Allah and the last day. Okay? Got it? ذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ وَأَحْسَنُ تَأْوِيلًا. That is better and more favorable in outcome and the result. So look, what does this ayah say is important. First, Allah Almighty says, أَطِيعُ اللَّهُ. Allah. Look, Allah is here. Okay? وَأَطِيعُ الرَّسُولُ. The obedience to the Prophet is equal to the obedience to the
Imam.
Allah Himself. Yeah, you're correct. Now the next point is here. وَأُولِ الْأَمْرِ. And the obedience to the أُولِ الْأَمْرِ is equal to the obedience to the Prophet and to Allah Almighty. So people should follow that person. Prophet is infallible. Now, what about أُولِ الْأَمْرِ? The governors, the leaders after the Prophet. Can the leaders who are after the Prophet, أُولِ الْأَمْرِ, can they be any person? Any person?
No.
It should be someone who at least must have similarities to the Prophet and to Allah Almighty. You got it? So Allah Almighty, Prophet, and Ulil Amr must be the same as Prophet.
Yes.
He should be infallible, he should be knowledgeable, he should be chosen by Allah Almighty, because Allah Almighty chose Prophet. So he, Ulul Amr as well, should be. This is called Imama. That's what we believe in Imam Ali alayhi salam. He is the right person because Allah Almighty has commanded that he should be, when you obey, okay, the leader, okay, he should have at least some similarities to us. Got it?
Yes.
The infallibility, the knowledge, the justice, these things.
Yeah.
Not like others who, like illegally, okay, in a batil way, got the control of the Islamic Ummah.
الذين يذكرون الله قياما وقعودا وعلى جنوبهم.
If you see the Holy Quran in Surah Muzammil, ayat number 20, Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala says, and recite as much as possible from the Quran. As much as possible.
رَبَّنَا مَا خَلَقْتَ هَذَا.
That's why they say one of the beauties of the eloquence of the fasahat and balaghat of the Quran is that whenever you open the Quran, it's as if it speaks to you today very, very clearly.
The Quran is a covenant of God for His creature. It is misaq. It is covenant for His servants. It is necessary for the Muslims to read this covenant and recite 50 words every day.
So let's mention the tajweed rules, okay? Some of them quickly, and then inshallah we'll finish our session. The very first point, actually the rest of the explanations must be for you inshallah to refer to the tafasir books, Fawad and Ali Nasir, and brothers and sisters who have been listening to us. Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, the first point here is about the pronunciation of letters. Ha, Hamza, Dhal, someone help me.
Ta.
Ta. Ain. Next one.
Ha.
Mashallah. So, ha. These letters are important. Inshallah, pay attention to them. Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu. The word ya ayyu, you can skip the mat or you can extend the mat, okay?
No, it is jais.
So this, the word ya ayyu, so this, like the mat, you can extend the mat, okay? The sound, or shorten it.
Yeah.
Skip it. يا أيها الذين آمنوا, or you can skip that one. يا أيها الذين آمنوا, the word آمنوا is as well like this, okay? It's not wajib, it is jais, optional. أطيعوا الله وأطيعوا الرسول وأولي الأمر منكم. ألف مد واو مد here, يا مد will be skipped, okay? Sorry, Wawmat and Yamat. Ati'u Allaha wa ati'u ar-Rasula. So you skip the Waw here. Ati'u Allaha wa ati'u ar-Rasula. Wa uli al-Amr. You skip the Mat. Wa uli al-Amr. There is a Waw in the word uli. The Waw has a sukun on the top. Yeah. It's an exceptional word. Uli, ula'ika, ula'iha. These words, okay? The Waw will be skipped. Ignore the Waw. Ulil Amri minkum, nun sakin plus kaf, hide the sound of minkum. Fa in tanazartum, again ikhfa, hide the sound of nun. Fa in tanazartum fi shay'in, again the same way, hide the sound of tanwin, because tanwin and nun, they have the same rules, okay? Farudduhu ila Allahi wal rasuli in kuntum, hide the sound, both of them, yes?
In
kuntum tu'minuna billahi wal yawmil akhiri. Akhir, Jim is there to tell you that there is a bus stop, yeah? You can stop here or
continue.
Continue, yeah. ذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ تَنْوِين. After تَنْوِين you have واو خَيْرُ. You merge the sound. وَأَحْسَنُ تَأْوِيلًا. Right? That's تَأْوِيلًا changes to تَأْوِيلًا. Ready to recite after me?
Yes.
Because you've learned the tajweed rules. Ready? 1, 2, 3. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا أطيعوا الله وأطيعوا الرسول وأولي الأمر منكم.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا أطيعوا الله وأطيعوا الرسول وأولي الأمر منكم.
أحسنتم. وأولي الأمر منكم. فإن تنازعتم في شيء فردوه إلى الله والرسول إن كنتم تؤمنون بالله.
فَإِن تَنَازَعْتُمْ فِي شَيْءٍ فَرُدُّوهُ إِلَى اللَّهِ وَالرَّسُولِ إِن كُنتُمْ تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ.
أَحْسَنْتُمْ. إِن كُنتُمْ تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ.
إن كنتم تؤمنون بالله واليوم الآخر.
ذلك خير وأحسن تأويلا.
ذلك خير وأحسن تأويلا.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
ما شاء الله. Allah bless you, inshallah. That's all for today, brothers and sisters. Stay with IRIB English Radio, inshallah. Thank you so much, Fawad and Ali Nasir. Thanks for being with us today. Inshallah, we'll be here with you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور. آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به. هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.